Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into one of the most intriguing and, well, honestly challenging areas in neuroscience.
We're talking about the central role misfolded proteins play in a whole range of neurodegenerative diseases. Really fundamental stuff.
Exactly. Our mission, if you will, is to navigate through some key research, looking at the complex mechanisms behind conditions like Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and Huntington's disease.
Now, what's striking is that even though they look very different clinically, different symptoms, different genetics sometimes,
right,
they all share this core pathological feature, the buildup, the accumulation of these misfolded proteins in the brain.
Yeah, and we're talking specific proteins for each, aren't we? Like,
yeah.
For Alzheimer's disease, it's amyloid beta and tau proteins.
Mm-hmm. And for Parkinson's disease, it's mainly alpha-synuclein.
Okay, then you've got TDP43, or SOD1, or FUS, and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Right, several possibilities there.
And mutant Huntington protein in Huntington's disease. It feels like understanding these common threads isn't just interesting, it's really crucial if we want to find therapies down the line.
Absolutely crucial, because if there's a shared problem at the molecular level, well, maybe there are shared solutions, or at least common targets we can aim for.
It's that paradox you mentioned, isn't it? How this one fundamental issue, protein misfolding, can spiral out into such, you know, incredibly diverse and devastating diseases.
That's what's so fascinating and challenging. It tells us that even with these varied clinical pictures, the shared mechanism, this misfolding, gives researchers a common target, a point of focus.
It really is striking. So if these misfolded proteins are the main drivers, does that suggest that if we could just sort of stop them from misfolding, could we potentially halt the disease, regardless of which protein it is?
That's the billion-dollar question, really. And to get a handle on that, it helps to look at it from different levels, you know, from the whole organ down to the nitty-gritty molecular details, see how the damage actually happens.
Okay, let's do that. Start with, say, Alzheimer's disease. Where's the primary hit?
So for Alzheimer's disease, the main damage is concentrated in the hippocampus and the cerebral cortex, areas absolutely critical for memory, for thinking.
And at the cellular level, what's going on with the neurons themselves?
You see dysfunction and ultimately the death of specific neurons, particularly pyramidal neurons in those regions.
Okay. And molecularly, that's where the proteins come in.
Exactly. Molecularly, it's the buildup of misfolded amyloid beta proteins, often forming plaques outside cells, and also hyperphosphorylated tau proteins, forming tangles inside neurons.
Right, plaques and tangles.
And that accumulation triggers this whole cascade loss of synapses, problems with mitochondria, the cell's powerhouses, and quite widespread neuroinflammation.
Okay. So what about Parkinson's disease? Does it follow a similar pattern? Or is its signature different?
The underlying principle of protein misfolding is there, yes. But Parkinson's disease definitely has its own distinct signature. The pathology typically starts deeper in the brain in the substantia nigra part of the midbrain.
And that's where dopamine is produced.
Precisely. So you get this progressive loss of dopaminergic neurons, the dopamine-producing cells.
Leading to the movement issues.
Right. And molecularly, the key player is the accumulation of alpha-synuclein aggregates. These form inclusions called Lewy bodies inside the neurons.
Lewy bodies, okay.
And these contribute to oxidative stress, more synaptic loss, and generally messing up neuronal signaling.
And amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Yeah.
The picture changes again, I assume.
Yes. With amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, the focus shifts to the motor system. You see degeneration in the motor cortex, the part of the brain controlling movement, and the corticospinal tracts, the pathways connecting the brain to the spinal cord.
Leading to the loss of motor neurons.
Tragically, yes. Progressive death of motor neurons. And molecularly, the culprits here are usually mislocalized or aggregated TDP43, FUS, or sometimes SOD1 proteins.
And the consequences?
Things like defects in axonal transport, getting materials up and down the long nerve fibers, excitotoxicity, where neurons get overstimulated, and again, mitochondrial dysfunction. It's a direct hit on the motor network.
Okay. One more Huntington's disease.
Huntington's is primarily genetic, caused by an expansion in the Huntington gene. It mainly affects the basal ganglia and the corpus striatum, regions crucial for motor control, but also cognition and emotion.
Right, and cell-wise.
You see a loss of a specific type of neuron called medium spiny neurons in those areas.
And the protein problem.
It's the aggregation of the mutant Huntington protein itself because of those expanded CAG repeats in the gene. This leads to synaptic dysfunction, neuroinflammation, and a critical loss of support from factors like brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF.
Wow. So when you lay it out like that, level by level, what really jumps out is, despite the different disease names, the specific proteins, the different brain regions initially hit, they're all fundamentally attacking similar cellular machinery, synapses, mitochondria, inflammatory responses. It feels like it's not just about the aggregates themselves, but about protecting these common vulnerable points.
That's a fantastic way to put it. It highlights this possibility for developing treatments that aren't necessarily disease-specific, but maybe mechanism-specific, protecting those shared vulnerable pathways.
Exactly. Which brings us to the how. The real puzzle isn't just that these proteins misfold, but how they go from being, you know, normal functional proteins to these destructive clumps, step by step.
Right. Understanding that journey is critical if we want to figure out when and where to intervene. It's quite an intricate, almost insidious process.
So where does it begin?
Well, it starts, usually harmlessly enough, with monomers. These are just the basic single protein units. Normally, they're soluble, floating around doing their jobs. Think of them as individual functional building blocks.
Okay, monomers. What's next?
Under certain conditions, maybe stress, genetic mutations, or just aging, some of these monomers can start sticking together. They form small clusters called oligomers, maybe just a few monomers, up to perhaps 20 or so.
And these oligomers, they're still soluble.
Generally, yes, they're still soluble, but this is where things start to go wrong. These small clusters can begin to interfere with normal cellular processes. They're sort of like rogue elements starting to cause trouble, even though they're small.
Okay, so monomers, then oligomers. What's the step after that?
From oligomers, the process often moves towards forming protofibrils. These are larger, still somewhat unstable aggregates. They represent a kind of transitional stage where the aggregation really starts to pick up speed, like the scaffolding starting to go up for a bigger structure.
Getting more organized in the habit.
Exactly. And then you get fibrils. These are long, rope-like filaments made of stacked, misfolded proteins. They're generally insoluble and have a very characteristic, stable structure, often involving beta sheets. These fibrils really form the core of the pathological inclusions we see later.
Like the main reinforcing bars in these problematic structures.
A good analogy. And finally, you get the large inclusions. This is the end stage we often visualize, where masses of these fibrils accumulate, either inside neurons, like Lewy bodies in Parkinson's, or outside neurons, like amyloid plaques in Alzheimer's.
So these are the big visible hallmarks you'd see under a microscope in late-stage disease.
Correct. They are definite markers of pathology.
That breakdown is really clear. Monomers, oligomers, protofibrils, fibrils, inclusions. But it makes you wonder if those earlier forms, the oligomers, are already causing disruption.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean our therapeutic focus should maybe shift earlier in the process, not just waiting to clear out the big inclusions?
That's precisely where a lot of research is heading. Recognizing the dynamic nature of this pathway is key. While the big inclusions are obvious markers, understanding the role and impact of those earlier soluble species is incredibly important for developing interventions that could potentially prevent or slow the disease much earlier.
Right. Getting ahead of the curve.
Exactly.
Now, these principles apply broadly, but maybe we could use Parkinson's disease as a lens to dive deeper. It seems like a good example for these mechanisms. I remember seeing images showing the loss of pigment in the substantia nigra.
Yes, that macroscopic observation, the fading pigment in the substantia nigra of a Parkinson's brain compared to a healthy one, perfectly reflects the microscopic loss of those vital dopaminergic neurons.
And inside those remaining neurons, or even before they die, that's where you find the Lewy bodies.
Correct. Lewy bodies are these intracellular inclusions, primarily made up of aggregated alpha-synuclein. They are a key pathological hallmark of Parkinson's disease, found mainly, though not exclusively, in those dopaminergic neurons.
And there's complexity even within those fibrils, right? Different shapes.
Absolutely. Structural studies have shown that alpha-synuclein fibrils aren't all identical. They can adopt different conformations, different three-dimensional shapes, sometimes called polymorphs, like 2A and 2B have been described.
Like different keys?
Sort of. And these subtle structural differences might actually explain some of the heterogeneity we see in the disease. Why one person has mostly motor symptoms while another develops dementia early on, it's an active area of research. These different strains of fibrils might interact differently with the cell.
Fascinating. But ultimately, the aggregation itself is disrupting the neurons.
Yes, the aggregation of alpha-synuclein into these fibrils and Lewy bodies interferes with normal neuronal function and contributes significantly to the eventual death of those dopaminergic cells.
Which brings us to that really fundamental question people are still debating. Are Lewy bodies actually causing the damage, or are they more of a consequence? Maybe even the cell trying to protect itself by corralling the bad stuff.
It's a huge debate, and honestly, the evidence is tricky. There are points for both sides.
Okay. What's the case for them being the cause?
Well, one argument is that the amount of Lewy body pathology often correlates with how severe the disease is, both motor symptoms and cognitive decline. That suggests they are actively toxic.
Makes sense. But the other side, the consequence argument.
There are a few points there. First, you can sometimes find protein aggregates, similar to Lewy bodies, in the brains of older individuals who never showed any symptoms of Parkinson's.
Okay.
And second, there are some genetic forms of Parkinson's, like those linked to mutations in the LRRK2 gene, where you see significant neurodegeneration, loss of dopamine neurons, but without the classic Lewy body formation.
So cell death without the bodies.
Exactly. Which complicates the picture. So the truth might be somewhere in between. Maybe they are toxic in some contexts, maybe protective in others. Maybe their role changes as the disease progresses. It's still very much an open question.
And that uncertainty really matters for designing therapies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you target the Lewy bodies themselves or something else?
Precisely. It's why understanding their exact role is so critical.
This complexity isn't just within Parkinson's either. You mentioned alpha-synuclein.
Mm.
That leads to the idea of synucleinopathies, right? A group of diseases linked by this one protein.
Yes, exactly. Synucleinopathies are a perfect example of this same protein, different diseases concept. It's all about abnormal alpha-synuclein aggregation, but where it happens and which cells are primarily affected dictates the clinical outcome.
So Parkinson's disease is one synucleinopathy, mainly hitting the substantia nigra, causing motor symptoms. What are the others?
Well, you have Parkinson's disease with dementia. That starts looking like classic Parkinson's. But then cognitive decline becomes a major feature as the pathology spreads to cortical areas.
Okay.
Then there's dementia with Lewy bodies, or DLB. This often presents differently, sometimes with cognitive problems, visual hallucinations, and fluctuations in alertness early on, alongside or even before significant motor symptoms. The Lewy bodies are more widespread in the cortex from earlier stages.
Hallucinations and fluctuating alertness. That sounds incredibly difficult to diagnose.
It really is. And then you have multiple system atrophy, or MSA. Here, the alpha-synuclein aggregates are found predominantly in glial cells, not neurons, particularly oligodendrocytes.
Glial cells, the support cells.
Yes, and MSA primarily affects the autonomic nervous system controlling blood pressure, bladder function, as well as motor control, often involving the cerebellum, leading to balance problems. So very different symptoms again.
It just hammers home how location and cell type are everything. And it makes me think, tragically, of the story of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Wasn't his diagnosis complex?
You're absolutely right to bring him up. His case is a really powerful and sad real-world example of this complexity, particularly with dementia, with Lewy bodies. He experienced symptoms that were confusing and distressing, severe anxiety, paranoia, hallucinations, alongside motor disturbances.
And the initial diagnosis was Parkinson's.
Yes, but the symptoms didn't quite fit the typical Parkinson's progression. It was only after his death during the autopsy that the true extent of the pathology was revealed. He had widespread Lewy bodies consistent with dementia with Lewy bodies.
And it wasn't just Lewy bodies, was it? I thought there were other pathologies too.
Correct. The autopsy also revealed evidence of Alzheimer's pathology, amyloid plaques, and some tau tangles, which is not uncommon in dementia with Lewy bodies, and adds another layer of complexity. His struggle really shone a spotlight on how difficult these overlapping conditions are to diagnose accurately during life.
A heartbreaking illustration of why precise biomarkers are so desperately needed. It really shows how this one protein, alpha-synuclein, depending on where it aggregates and which cells it affects,
leads to vastly different clinical realities. Comparing multiple system atrophy, dementia with Lewy bodies, and Parkinson's disease. Dementia side by side makes it clear.
Well, multiple system atrophy, glial cells, autonomic failure, motor issues, often cerebellar.
Mm-hmm. Dementia with Lewy bodies, neuronal inclusions, widespread in cortex and substantia nigra, leading to that mix of cognitive, psychiatric, and motor symptoms, often early cognitive decline.
And Parkinson's disease dementia, neuronal inclusions too. But the dementia typically comes after the motor symptoms are well established.
Exactly. Same core protein problem, alpha-synuclein aggregation, but the cellular context and anatomical spread create these distinct diseases.
Okay, so we've got the misfolding, the aggregation pathway, how location matters. But what actually triggers or regulates this? Why does a protein like alpha-synuclein decide to go rogue in the first place? Let's maybe unpack this with an analogy. Imagine a protein is like a plain muffin.
I like that, a plain muffin. Okay. The regulation often comes down to something called post-translational modifications, or PTMs.
BTMs, okay.
These are chemical changes made to a protein after it's been synthesized, after the basic recipe from the gene has been followed. They act like little tags or signals.
Like adding toppings to the muffin.
Exactly like that. PTMs are the toppings. Maybe phosphorylation is like adding chocolate chips. Ubiquitination is like adding nuts. Truncation is like cutting a piece off. These toppings change the muffins or the protein's flavor and texture, its stability, its interactions, its function.
So the right combination of toppings keeps the muffin, the protein, stable and doing its job.
Precisely. But the wrong combination, or too many of one kind, or toppings in the wrong place, that can make the protein unstable, prone to misfolding, prone to clumping together like an overloaded muffin collapsing.
And it's not just one topping at a time, is it?
Oh no, that's where it gets incredibly complex. A single protein, like alpha-synuclein, can have many different PTMs happening simultaneously or sequentially. They can work together, they can oppose each other. It's an intricate regulatory network.
That makes sense. So if we look back at Lewy bodies through this PTM lens, they're not just simple clumps of alpha-synuclein.
Far from it. They are biochemically rich, highly complex structures. When scientists analyze them, they find not just aggregated alpha-synuclein, but also specific structural features like beta sheets, and crucially, a whole host of different PTMs.
Like which ones are key for alpha-synuclein?
Phosphorylation is a major one, especially at a specific site called serine-129. Over 90% of the alpha-synuclein found in Lewy bodies is phosphorylated at this spot. It's a huge pathological signature.
Wow, 90%.
Yeah. But you also find ubiquitination, which often targets proteins for degradation, but can play complex roles in aggregation and truncation, where parts of the protein are cleaved off.
And does the structure reflect this complexity?
Absolutely. Detailed imaging, like 3D reconstructions, shows Lewy bodies often have a layered structure with different PTMs and truncated forms, perhaps concentrated in different regions. This isn't just random clumping. There's organization there.
And this complex structure, these PTMs, they influence how toxic the Lewy body is or how it spreads.
That's the idea. The specific mix of PTMs likely affects the aggregate stability, its ability to interact with cellular machinery, perhaps how easily it can seed further aggregation, and potentially its toxicity. It's a dynamic network, and understanding these PTMs in Parkinson's disease is vital for getting at the precise mechanisms.
It sounds incredibly complicated, but also potentially useful. If these PTMs are so specific to the disease process, what does that mean practically for, future neuroscientists or even for patients?
This is where it gets really exciting from a clinical perspective. These PTMs, because they are often specific to the disease state, can serve as powerful biomarkers.
Biomarkers, measurable indicators of
Yeah.
disease. Exactly.
The hope, and increasingly the reality, is that we can detect specific PTM patterns of proteins like alpha-synuclein, not just in the brain after death, but in accessible fluids like blood plasma, serum, or even cerebrospinal fluid during life.
Even before symptoms show up.
That's the ultimate goal. If specific PTMs occur early in the disease process, detecting them could allow for much earlier diagnosis. Think of them as molecular fingerprints.
A fingerprint for Parkinson's, or maybe even distinguishing between Parkinson's and dementia with Lewy bodies based on the PTM pattern?
Potentially, yes. Different PTM profiles might correlate with different synucleinopathies or different stages of the disease. If we can identify these unique patterns, it opens the door not only to earlier diagnosis using less invasive tests like a blood test, but also potentially to monitoring disease progression or response to treatment.
That would be a massive leap forward. And this biomarker potential, using PTMs, it's not just for Parkinson's and alpha-synuclein, right? Does it apply elsewhere?
Oh, absolutely. The principle holds true across neurodegenerative diseases. For Alzheimer's disease, for example, researchers are intensely studying PTMs of tau protein, particularly specific phosphorylation patterns. Detecting these modified tau species in cerebrospinal fluid or blood is already becoming part of the diagnostic toolkit and research landscape.
So phosphorylated tau for Alzheimer's, phosphorylated alpha-synuclein for Parkinson's. It's the same underlying concept.
It is different proteins, different PTMs, but the same fundamental idea. These modifications act as signatures of the pathological process. That's why studying PTMs is so fundamental. It cuts across diseases and holds immense promise for diagnostics and perhaps even for developing therapies that target these specific modifications.
What a fascinating journey we've taken. We started with this fundamental problem, protein misfolding, uniting these diverse diseases.
Mm-hmm. Then trace the aggregation pathway monomers to oligomers, fibrils, inclusions.
We dove deep into alpha-synuclein, seeing how it causes different synucleinopathies like Parkinson's and dementia with Lewy bodies, using Robin Williams' story as such a poignant example of that complexity.
And then we peeled back another layer to look at the incredible intricacy of post-translational modifications. How will these chemical tags regulate protein fate and offer this huge potential as biomarkers?
It really feels like understanding these PTMs is key to unlocking the next level.
It certainly seems that way, which maybe raises a question for you as you continue studying neuroscience.
Okay.
Given that we have this shared protein pathology, like alpha-synuclein, but it leads to such different clinical outcomes, how might digging deeper into the specific PTMs, their exact type, their location on the protein, the cellular context where they occur, how might that understanding allow us to develop truly personalized therapies? Strategies that target the unique molecular fingerprint of each individual patient's disease.
That's a powerful thought. Moving beyond just clearing aggregates to precision interventions based on these detailed molecular signatures. A huge challenge, but also an incredible opportunity.
Definitely something to think about.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the complex world of misfolded proteins, PTMs, and neurodegeneration. We hope you found it insightful and that you continue exploring these vital topics.